Good morning, listeners to WGXC, and welcome to this edition of the Albany Report. I'm Cecilia Kacik, former state senator and your host of the Albany Report. We're airing live out of our WGXC radio studio here in Hudson. Today, later on the show, we are going to be talking about libraries. And I have two guests who are in the studio with me, Tim Burke, he's executive director of the Upper Hudson Library System, and Jeremy Johannesson, he's the executive director of the New York Library Association. And you can call or send us a question via email at info@thealbanyreport@gmail.com or call us later in the show at 518-828-0290. So there's been a lot going on in Albany this past week, and it was a very, very busy weekend, and we apparently have a deal on the New York State budget. A deal was reached and announced by Governor Cuomo and legislative leaders last night. The $150 billion spending plan has a little bit that everyone seems to be happy with, but we don't have all of the details. Several of the budget bills have been printed. Two have not been printed yet, and those bills contain some of the issues that had most contention and most debate about. The governor came out in January demanding ethics reform and changes to school reforms and tied his school reform legislation to funding and said the schools are not going to get an increase in their school aides if you don't pass my school reforms. So what happened? We're still waiting to see the final details of the education budget, but what was announced last night is the Speaker of the Assembly, Carl Hastie, said that $1.6 billion would be made available for school funding for schools. And we're expecting to see the bill come out today that has the details of how that will be distributed, how much of that will go to the gap elimination adjustment, how much of that will go into foundation's formula. And the schools will get their school aid runs later today. So they'll see how that formula works for their local school district. Some of the changes that the governor wanted and tied to increased funding were apparently included in the budget. There will be, according to the governor, a more rigorous evaluation system. Those changes and how that's going to be done apparently will be left up to the state education department. There is also a change on tenure. The budget agreement lengthens the time before teachers are eligible for tenure to 4 years. Currently, they get tenure after 3 years. The governor had initially proposed a 5-year window before tenure is granted. The compromise was also struck on school takeovers. Chronically low-performing schools will be given 1 or in some cases 2 years to improve. If they don't, local districts will have to appoint new management. It's not clear if those schools will be given additional funding to help them make the changes they need to improve. Again, those details will be spelled out in a budget bill that isn't printed yet. The other issue the governor came out strong pushing for after his 30-day budget amendment was ethics reform. And there's been a lot of discussion about that. Again, we haven't seen the details, but the governor is saying that he has won some ethics changes. And what they are is the new ethics rules will require lawmakers to disclose more about the income they earn on top of their government salaries, including broader disclosure of legal clients. The budget expands a pension forfeiture law. If you get convicted and found guilty of not doing your job as a legislator, you could have your pension forfeited, but that takes a constitutional amendment. The changes include further restricting the use of campaign funds for personal expenses. You now can't use your campaign funds to pay for a country club admission. And it puts in place new oversight for lawmakers' travel expenses. In the past, you would be able to get a per diem. Now you would have to submit actual travel receipts to get actual costs reimbursed. So these are some of the changes that have been talked about and we expect to see in the final budget. But, you know, the reaction from good government groups that was reported yesterday kind of described these changes, if this is indeed what we end up with, as weak tea. These changes hopefully will be in the final budget bills that will be printed later today. And the Senate and Assembly will start passing budget bills. The governor will have to provide a message of necessity because all of the bills are not printed in time for a three-day waiting period. So we will probably see everything done before April 1st. That will provide the governor with a streak of five on-time budgets. So there will be a lot more details coming out about the budgets as this week progresses, and hopefully we can catch up on some of the reactions to the final budget and things that are in them next week. Today, I'm really excited about talking about libraries, because libraries are a really important institution in our local communities, and we'll see what the library associations have to say about what they hope to see in the final budget. So why don't we take a break, and we'll get back to you with our guests in just a minute.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. It's all right.
We're back on the Albany Report with our guests. Joining me in the studio is Tim Burke. He's executive director of the Upper Hudson Library System, and Jeremy Johannesson. Am I saying that right? And he is executive director of the New York Library Association, which is a statewide association of libraries around the state. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thanks very much for having us.
Can we hear them? Because I'm not hearing them. So what I know the Siena did a poll recently, and you know, I think libraries are beloved in our communities. And I noticed when I was a senator, I visited a lot of libraries. They are housed in some of the oldest buildings in our communities and have incredible historical collections and really part of our history. And I think the investment in our libraries was seen as something that important to communities, you know, from the get-go of the founding of our societies and building of our villages and towns, because they're housed in such beautiful, often the first buildings that the community came together and constructed. So we're in some of the oldest buildings in our communities, and I'm sure there's challenges on how do we keep this institution, these libraries, alive and well and growing as the needs of our communities are changing. So,
absolutely. While you were in office, we noticed how many libraries you visited, and we appreciated that. And you're absolutely correct that the library is that cornerstone of the community. And to that, the New York State government many years ago put in place in education law formula funding to support libraries across the state. And They based that funding, like so many things, on the New York State, on the federal census, taking place once every 10 years, and created a formula that would provide state aid across across the state. And currently, based on the 2010 census, our most recent numbers, that formula leads to a number of $102.6 million that is in education law that should be is stipulated to be provided to underwrite the operation of libraries across the state. For a number of reasons, that funding is not actually provided in the state budget. A portion of it is. So last year...
Where's it going? Where's the other money going?
It's just into any number of places within the budget, right? So that, as you mentioned, $150 billion is a whole lot of money. And there's a lot of pieces and there's a lot of things to fund.
So we actually have a formula to fund the libraries throughout the state.
Correct.
But we don't fulfill that formula obligation.
That's
what
right.
You're
there's,
saying.
There's a bill on the table, and maybe not a legislative bill, but a tax bill that's there that is was agreed to and is in law that says this is how much money the legislature has agreed that should be provided, but we don't quite actually do that.
So every year there's a budget. We just talked about this morning. The budget's getting done this week. So there's a line item for school libraries, and that gets adjusted or proposed. What did the governor propose in his budget for
right.
libraries?
Well, and the that line for library aid is within the education budget.
Okay.
It's in the aid to localities. And it covers all the libraries. So it's not just school library aid. It's everything. So it covers there's funds that go to academic libraries, public libraries, school libraries. It's parsed out many, many ways. And there is a chunk that definitely goes to localities. There's a sizable portion of the funding that underwrites library systems that Tim Burke, that's here with us, will discuss. So there's over 25 programs that the funding goes through as it's parsed
okay.
out, and so like every piece of the New York State government, we took a lot of hits in 2008 and 2009 when the recession hit, and we all needed to tighten our belts, and we all did. But the library community and the library portion of the budget was hit disproportionately hard,
mm-hmm.
With collectively over 20% cut.
Wow.
So in 2007, the library aid was fully funding, but it's just been eroded to a low of $79 million. So we're still shy. And so this year was an improvement, we'll say, in little history in last year's executive budget. So now we're talking about fiscal year 14-15. Governor Cuomo actually proposed a $4 million cut in library aid. And through last year's budget process, the legislature did not agree with that. And thankfully, they put in a $5 million increase in their bills. And so the enacted budget, actually showed a net increase of $1 million in aid. Which is still quite a way shy of the $60 million we're still short. So this coming into this fiscal year, 15-16, when the governor put out his executive budget, he proposed flat funding over last year, which had us at $86.6 million, which is disheartening. That the governor, it's certainly better than a $4 million cut, but it's disheartening that the governor does not see the clear correlation between libraries and education. Education aid is increased every year, even in the darkest times. We see that the education of our young people is just the cornerstone of our civilization. The funding for libraries is administered through the state education department.
Mm-hmm.
Every library in the state is chartered by the Board of Regents. They are just integrated. They are education. And that has been our rallying cry for the last couple of years now, is to make everyone in Albany understand that when they're talking about funding education, that needs to include libraries and it needs to be proportionate. And so that message is resonated to the point where the Senate's one house bill includes a $5 million increase. Our early indications are showing that that's what we're anticipating seeing. You know, it's not done till the ink is dry, right?
But and that's one of the budget bills that has not been in print. And
exactly.
As you said, it's not done till it's done and it's passed. So hopefully you'll have some good news when you see that.
We're as optimistic as caution will allow.
Now, that $86.6 million, is that just for operating support? Does that include capital construction?
I think that doesn't include capital construction, but I think it's important to understand that most of that, the large majority of that $86 million in library aid, goes to support the system infrastructure that connects libraries together of all types, of all kinds throughout the state. It's actually a very forward-thinking system that was created 50 years ago by the state to share resources, to create equity for all New Yorkers as much as possible. So what we see in that $86 million library aid is most of that money goes to support the library systems, mm-hmm. both systems that support public libraries, academic libraries, and school libraries.
Well, Tim, I think you're probably familiar with some libraries that got hit hard by the floods. And I know, like, in Fort Plain in Montgomery County, they had some significant flood damage. And so when that happens, when your library gets hit, is this a pool of funding that helps support rebuilding or gives them some support to make repairs? Or is that something that's done outside of this type of budget?
That's typically done outside of the library aid budget. There is a fairly modest amount of money that goes based on per capita served that goes to each library in that library aid number, but it's not a significant amount of money. Far and away, the most support for individual libraries, public libraries, comes from their local municipalities.
Right. So when you have the challenges in rural areas are with our schools is they're not adequately funded through the state aid portion, and the local municipality, local property owners end up picking up more and more of a burden to provide that service. Do you see the same in libraries in rural communities?
Absolutely. The good news is that we know, and the Siena poll that Nyla just commissioned proves that people understand the value of libraries. Nobody likes to pay taxes.
No, of course not.
Nobody likes their taxes to increase, but we find that New Yorkers are willing to spend their tax dollars to support libraries because they do understand the value. Back to your question about the infrastructure issues in the Upper Hudson Library System, which is the 29 libraries in Albany and Rensselaer counties. We had a number of libraries that were hit hard by some of the recent natural disasters, not quite to the extent that Fort Plain and some of the Mohawk Valley libraries or Windham, some of those towns. But we did have a couple of libraries that were forced to close their doors for extended periods of time because they had flooding, and once they cleared everything out and dried everything out, they had to deal with the mold abatement, which is a significant issue that takes a long time to deal with. So a number of our libraries took hits from that. There is, in addition to this general line of library aid, there's also a $14 million public library construction grant program that's funded through New York State. That's $14 million statewide that provides matching grants for libraries to do infrastructure projects. And that's been it's been in place for a number of years, and it's been a very, very important program for libraries. We were able to get a change in it within the last couple of years that allowed libraries, it had been a 50-50 match. Library pays 50, and the grant pays the other 50%. We were able to recraft the language to allow 75% of the money to come from the grant funds, and only 25% the library had to come up, and that really opened the door for a lot of smaller libraries that really were having trouble even coming up with that 50% to get real infrastructure projects done to make sure the library's there to serve the next generation in that community.
Right.
And I would just add to the discussion of the construction aid program that the Board of Regents, in their request to the governor, requested that that receive a 10% increase of another $2.8 million from the 14 where it is, which is certainly forward thinking of the Regents. But when put into juxtaposition with a survey that was done by the State Library, the accumulated need for renovations and capital improvements in libraries in New York State, that number is over $2 billion.
Wow.
So it was a really teeny tiny, you know, $14 million sounds like a lot when you say that, but then when you think about what's really the need and all those beautiful old buildings that were not built in the days of LEED construction standards and energy efficiency, there's a long way for our infrastructure to advance.
And I think one of the things I also notice is that many of those buildings are historic. So when you try to repair them or bring them up to better standards with electricity and now you need internet broadband service, et cetera, there's more difficult challenges to keep the building historically, keep its historic characteristics. Mm-hmm. So the cost to repair and replace tend to be higher for these buildings because they're historic structures and you want to keep that historic nature in the buildings.
Absolutely. And it's important to understand that fundamental change in what libraries were 100 years ago, how they functioned, what they did, how people used them. And if you think about what a modern public library in the 21st century does, it's less about collections and more about people. It's about creating a hub for the community that allows people in the community to connect with the universe of information.
Right.
And that might be the universe of information that's provided by a community meeting room that allows local community groups to come together and discuss issues and topics. It also might be the internet connection that allows most of us to do the work of our daily lives in an increasingly required sense.
Right. I found it. I have internet access at home, high speed internet. I don't know how I could survive without it. But there are people in my community and in other, especially rural areas, don't have internet access and they rely on the library. I know my little library, you can see people there on the weekend and at night just sitting in the parking lot because they're getting connected with their Wi-Fi laptops.
3 o'clock in the morning is a popular place at a lot of rural libraries.
Are all of our libraries connected with high-speed internet access?
Speaking for the Upper Hudson Library System in Albany and Rensselaer counties, and again, we have some fairly rural libraries, we're all served by some form of broadband internet, so we're a fortunate library system. Downstate is very well connected.
Right.
When we go out into the southern tier or up into the north country, it's not the case. Getting reliable broadband to the libraries is a challenge, and it's an expense.
Sure. Jeremy, are there holes in our system?
Well, absolutely. There's certainly places where it's not just a question of does the library think this is important? It's a question of there's just not a broadband connection to participate in. And the governor has been very interested in expanding broadband, and it's an initiative of his. And pressing that broadband connectivity out and blanketing the state, but there's two factors. One, there's a huge area to cover, and two, you know, a joke that fiber connection could run through your front yard. If you can't afford the monthly connectivity fee, which I'm sure many of us know is not insignificant, it doesn't matter if it's there. And the CNN poll that we've referenced found that for households making under $50,000 a year, 25% of those households, their primary point of internet access is their local library.
Really?
And for nearly three quarters of the communities in New York State, the library is the only source of free internet access. You know, it's there's certain things where we've kind of, as I guess, urban dwellers, you know, you think, oh, Starbucks, right? I'm going to get a cup of coffee, and boy, there's free internet access there. And many McDonald's now are offering Wi-Fi that's available. Well, there's places where the closest McDonald's or Starbucks is 3 hours away.
Yeah.
And both of those places want you to make a purchase as well. They're not really going to take kindly to you sitting there. There are more public libraries in the state than there are McDonald's.
Right.
So,
well, the governor did say in one of his budget proposals was to take some of that money that the state collected from financial settlements of $5 billion, take $1.5 billion, and use that for infrastructure development, and said $500 million, I think he identified as going to broadband infrastructure development. And is the library, you know, are you working with his office? I mean, what do you do with when you hear things like that says maybe we need to partner with the local municipalities mm-hmm. and companies that are in the broadband business and make sure our libraries are prioritized and getting those connections, those key points.
Mm-hmm. We've just completed a three-year-long project where the New York Library Association was funded to provide train-the-trainer workshops. So we trained over 1,000 librarians across the state to position them to be ready to provide training to the patrons on how to be safe on the internet, this started very basic, you know, just how to sit down and interact with a PC. There's still folks that just are not there yet. And that has opened a lot of doors for us. So we participate with the broadband office. They have a conference coming up in Albany that we'll be participating in. So we're part of that conversation. There's just the infrastructure issues remain, just getting those dark spots covered.
And because this is a public-private partnership, there are companies out there that are in the business of making money to provide these services. And working with them creates another level of challenge because we have to make sure that they're getting their profit, so they're interested in doing
right.
this. So there is a need for leadership at the highest levels of the state to push this, to make those partnerships work, to be able to connect libraries to get their
right. So you guys can't do it yourselves. You've
right.
got to have we partnerships with yeah. local municipalities, local counties, who see if we can. We need to connect clearly. You know, we have gaps in our counties. We can't do everything at once. What are our priorities? Hopefully, they're seeing connecting with local libraries as one of those priorities, and local schools and local town offices and doctor's offices. And then if you're connecting to those places, at least the people along the way have an option to link in if they can. But you make a good point. Even if you can link in, sometimes the costs are still prohibitive. But you should be able to get access to it at the library, at your school, at your town hall, so that there's a place to go and get that connection. So much is done on the internet these days.
It really is becoming a necessity of life. One of the things I like to do in my meetings with legislators and decision makers is actually ask them to just stop talking for a couple of minutes and just think about what life would be like without internet access right now. And it's a scary thought for most of us who do most of our work
yeah.
via the internet.
I want to talk about reading, because you have summer reading programs, and it's something when my son was little, I was home with him, and one of the things we would do is go to libraries and participate in their programs. And, you know, like, I got a break because I could go read and he could, you know, participate in a reading program or things that you're doing. These are free events. I mean, things that you do during the summer are amazing. And I see kids flocking to local libraries, especially in rural communities where there's not a lot going on that you can get your kid to, where you don't have to travel far. So the summer reading programs are part a staple that you guys support and continue to grow. And it's so important because the reading, I remember going to a library in an urban area that had a lot of low-income residents, but and there were parents there bringing their kids, and I was reading to my son because he loved to be read to. He was like 4 at the time, and a little boy picked up a book and brought it to me and asked me to read to him. And it was just amazing that the kids at this age, the toddler groups especially, love to be read to, and that's such an important skill, and anyone can do it. Like, any person can come to the library and volunteer to read to kids. How do people who want to work, volunteer in your reading programs, and just read to kids, what should they do to get involved with libraries?
Well, anyone who wants to help libraries, and many, many of our libraries are short of staff, limited hours, and the volunteer component of the staffing is very important to libraries. Each library makes its own decisions and has its own processes for working with volunteers. So anyone who's interested should absolutely contact their local library, start very local, and say, I'd like to help. What can I do? The summer reading program is supported by New York State, the State Education Department, Division of Library Development, and also by the public library systems to create, again, equity of service for all New Yorkers. We push that summer reading program out to all the libraries. Different libraries have different resource bases to be able to do programs on differing levels, but there's a lot of shared services and coordination that goes into that program. And it's really important to remember that libraries are open during the summer when the schools are closed. So we provide that bridge so kids keep their skills honed.
And practice them.
Absolutely. And reading is still absolutely important. I know we all see kids with their devices and phones and tablets. But statistically, it's still measured that children get the biggest learning experience, the greatest learning experience from reading itself.
Well, I have a story to tell, and we have some questions from listeners. One of my son's favorite activities is reading. And I remember, you know, he loved to be read to. We did a lot of reading together, and he loved going to libraries. And we went through the whole phase of the Game Boy and computer gaming, and you thought he's never going to pick up a book again. He went through that whole phase and then went back to books. And he's 15 now, and his favorite activity is reading, and he wants to be a writer. And I really think that experience with books when he was very young really helped him grow and really see that he gets a lot more enjoyment from reading than he does from playing video games. And I think that's, so keep the reading up and keep encouraging it.
And it is something that we see time and time again, that young children who are exposed to this, the power of the library as a lifelong education tool. When they get into high school and start getting involved with some of the other devices and games and things like that, they do drift away a little bit. Sometimes when they're in their 20s, they drift away a little bit. But once they start having kids in their late 20s, we get them back. And if they had a positive experience early on in their life, they're going to bring their kids back to the library. Yeah. And that's kind of that lifelong education spectrum that public libraries can provide for all New Yorkers.
We have some questions. This is from Elizabeth and Socrates. How much money is spent each year by the Assembly and, I guess, the Senate to sponsor the summer reading program? And would that be better spent given directly to underfunded local libraries to publicize their programs?
The summer reading program actually is underwritten with federal funds.
Okay.
It comes through the IMLS, the Institute of Museum and Library Services.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's not funding that's directly coming from New York State. It's all underwritten that way.
And is it going directly to local libraries or schools or?
There's a modest amount of that goes directly to individual libraries. Again, most of that money goes into a program that's pushed out from the library systems to all the libraries. And I think the other key piece when we talk about state aid for libraries, and I've mentioned this phrase a number of times, the idea of using state funding to create equity for all library users is really important. There is a temptation and certainly an understandable desire to fund those poorest funded libraries, the libraries that are struggling the most, and they're in all parts of New York State. But I think the limited dollars can be better spent to create that equity rather than targeting libraries. I really think the formula, the way it works, not the way it's funded, but how the formula is set up, I really do think it works well for all New Yorkers.
So that formula does address the inequity and gets more support to the libraries that need it if it's funded fully.
Right.
And that's
right.
The challenge in education aid, too.
Absolutely.
The formula might work if it got funded fully so that you had the money to provide to those entities that need more resources.
Right.
Another question, because your libraries, independent libraries, are funded, but do you also fund school library programs through this funding, or is that separate?
So there's an infrastructure in place to help support the school libraries, and some of that money in the state aid program goes there. There's a structure of school library systems, and they work in close partnership with the BOCES, the Board of Cooperative Educational Services that many of us are familiar with, that provide shared services across school districts. And so that infrastructure provides support for school libraries across districts and allows them to make cooperative purchases.
Mm-hmm.
So much, as we alluded to, so much is changing in the library, and so many of the resources are moving from print to electronic. And so these structures allow the sharing of access to an electronic database across numerous schools, saving the municipalities and the local school districts money by sharing those resources and then getting them into the hands of the students so that they can do a higher caliber of research by having access to that. And the school library systems also help provide professional development to the school librarians and make sure that they are at the forefront and providing the information that the students need. The role of the school librarian has changed as much as the shape and face of the public library has changed over the years. They're certainly far removed from somebody that's just circulating a children's book collection.
Right.
And
right.
Now so much of internet safety and internet usage is falling to the school librarians to make sure that our kids are both safe online and that they're also capable of critical analysis of navigating a sea of information.
Right. It's overwhelming what you have access to when you're online. And if you're not a critical thinking person and looking and being thoughtful about, all right, where is this real information? And I know my son, he took a class with the librarian. Mm-hmm. It was their job to help them understand how do you determine if the information you're getting off of the internet is factual, because just because it's on the internet or just because it's even in the newspaper doesn't mean it's true and accurate. And you know, how do you sift through all that? So those are really important skills. A question we got about elementary school librarians, and they are not, it's not mandated that you have an elementary school librarian, but the research says that K through 3 children are the foundation years, and that those years determine a child's success in future. Why aren't school librarians mandated? And is that And what can we do to mandate librarians and library services to children K through 3?
Sure. Thank you to that listener for that question. One of the New York Library Association's legislative priorities that we have on our agenda is a bill that would require just that. It's sponsored by Senator Farley, who is I refer to him as the patron saint of libraries for New York State.
He's been there a long time and on the education committee for over 30 years.
Over 30 years, yeah. So he is the sponsor of that bill for us in the Senate. And
does the bill have a number?
It does. I'll look it up for you and get that for you for your listeners. But the bill changes education law, and you're correct that right now high school level students are required to have access to a school librarian, but that does not carry all the way to the elementary school. And that requirement is it's not in education law; it's in the commissioner's regulations. And so schools that ignore that or violate that regulation, even at the high school level, there's really no enforcement mechanism for that.
Okay, so you just confused me.
It's not
mandated. So there's no law that says you have to have a school librarian in the elementary grades. But there's a rule that says you have to have a librarian in the high school grades.
Correct. And that's a commissioner's regulation. So what our bill is seeking to do.
So it's not a law. So it's not really mandated?
Well, right. So it's a recommendation that is put out. And a majority of our schools, I would say that a vast majority of our schools are following that recommendation. And I think the cases where it's not being followed is not because it's not valued. It's more of an issue of availability, or there's a number of reasons. And I think the place we see the biggest challenge is within the New York City school system.
Yeah,
so biggest challenge.
Are you tracking what schools are cutting libraries and library services?
We are. We have partners. The school library systems that I mentioned earlier, they're the directors of those institutions. We partner with them to keep track as best we can of the information across all the districts to watch and keep an eye out for cuts and to get a clear sense of what's available, what schools are being providing those resources. And so this bill would change, it would actually move what's already in regulation in and codify it in education law and expand the reach to take it all the way down to kindergarten. So it'd be a K-12 exposure.
Does the bill also say that the state will provide the funding to go with that?
Well, the devil's in the details, right?
Yeah.
We understand that this will be a multi-year effort. And full disclosure, multi-year is that in some shape or form, this concept has been kicking around the halls of Albany for over 30 years. It's a challenging thing to increase mandates on the schools, and we recognize that. And we are working to find creative solutions to that funding issue and working to make sure that we can build a broad base of support.
Right, because they got cut, as you said, not because we don't value that work and the importance of libraries in our schools. They got cut because you had to cut something.
Correct.
And it's not mandated.
Resources are constrained. There has to be choices made, and that includes the drama coaches and sports teams and art programs and libraries. All of those get kind of thrown into that hopper because there isn't a requirement to have that. We really do think that this is absolutely the right thing to do for our school children, because as the questioner mentions, the research is clear that if students have access to a librarian as part of their curriculum in those formative years, their success in school is better, their graduation rate is better, and their success in life, college applications and acceptances, all go up, and it's statistically tied to that as one of the factors. So we know this is the right thing to do, and we'll work on it.
Do you have a sponsor in the assembly for it?
We do not have a assembly sponsor at this point. We are being careful about finding just the right person to champion this, and we have ongoing conversations with a number of folks. And as you asked, the bill number is 3931 in the Senate, and it's active this year.
So that's S3931.
Correct.
So if you want to follow that legislation or find out more about it and see where it's at, it has to go through a committee process. So what committee would it go through? Education,
correct.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
And so it has to be put on an education committee agenda, and then it has to wait 3 days before it can get to a floor agenda. Mm-hmm. So if this is something you want to learn more about, just go to the New York State Senate website and look up the legislation or bill searching box. Put in S3931, and you can click on actions, and it'll give you the text of and the bill memo. There's a memo that explains what the bill does. And if it's something you care about, you can write a letter to the sponsor or talk to your own legislative representative and say and let them know how you feel about that type of legislation. So this is really helpful information about, you know, what can we do to change libraries and help them continue to be important, you know, structures and resources in our communities. So what else are you working on or hoping to see to improve libraries beyond the legislation and the hopes that the budget will be adequately funded to support all of the libraries in New York State?
Mm-hmm. Well, we have another bill on our agenda that's targeted towards publicly funded research. So the state puts out money that funds mostly academic research. So, for example, the New York State Department of Health is the largest funder of research dollars out of the state. And we have a bill that would change the way the product of that research is handled. So currently, once a report is done and the research is complete, if it's published in a peer-reviewed journal, both academic libraries within our colleges and universities, but also public libraries, are paying access to a research database to gain access to that paper that was already paid for with public dollars. So we have a bill, also sponsored by Senator Farley, that would require that the sponsoring agency, so the Department of Health or Transportation, DEC, whichever that was, that after a one-year moratorium, so after it had aged, any research paid for by public dollars, printed in a peer-reviewed journal, would become available on that agency's website free of charge for the public to review, opening the doors for broader access to the research that the state has paid for.
I think that's excellent. So. I mean, I think we should all have access to the research that we as taxpayers are paying for. That makes perfect sense. I think another role that libraries play that's really important is you help the public get access to documents that might be pertinent to local issues going on in your local town. And correct me if I'm wrong, but do you typically have a role if there's some development coming in or some proposal coming into a town or a village, and the documents that explain this project, so to speak, you can go to the library and get access to them. What else can you talk a little bit about the resources at librarians that people, you know, we go there with our kids. What other resources do you have available to folks who are seeking information that you might have it and they may not realize?
And I think the local development issue is an important one. Libraries are increasingly one of the only places that are open during a wide array of hours that the public can come in and ask for that information. So that's an important role we can play. The other important role, I mentioned it before, is the role of community gathering space. When the community needs to come together, increasingly there's fewer and fewer places in both suburban and urban and rural environments.
So anyone can seek meeting space? Do you charge for that?
Most libraries do not charge at all. Sometimes there's a charge for a for-profit group that wants to meet. usually the basic requirement is you have to meet the library's rules, so the meeting has
no
to be...
No food and drink, probably.
Well, and or limited food and drink, but free and open to the public.
Yep.
No admission. Those kind of basic requirements. But again, schools are understandably less open to the public for a lot of reasons. We certainly want to protect our school children. Churches 50 years ago used to play a much bigger role in that community conversation. That doesn't happen as much anymore. So libraries are one of those places publicly mm-hmm. where the community can come together and you know, increasingly where the locus for that in a community. And that can be an important role. The other thing that I mentioned, the fact that libraries, because of that internet connection, are portals to that universe of information. But you can get to that universe of information in a lot of ways. One of the things that libraries offer is the local history information that it has, collects, keeps, maintains, and makes available that isn't available in a lot of other places. Many towns and municipalities do have a local history or a local historian, but the library is part of that piece too. And that's really a key piece in this world where it seems like everything's on the web. Sometimes these are the things that the local information that libraries can provide that can't really be accessed easily anywhere else.
And I think librarians are a fountain of information and know how to get information. And if you don't have it, I'm sure the librarians can help direct the public to where they can get access information.
It's what we do. I mean, literally, it's what we do. And that's why all of us got into this profession. And this is the thing we love to do. I like to remind young librarians and people I'm talking to that all librarians, no matter who they work for, where they work, all they do is connect people with the information they need, and that's literally what we do. So if you have an information need, you should go to a librarian because we'll connect you with what you need.
The quip is that Google will return you 10,000 results and a librarian will return the right one.
Amen.
That's a great quote. I will remember that one. I think it's just astounding what you have access to on things like the World Wide Web, but a lot of times what you need is not easily found.
Right.
And clearly starting at the library level to seek that out and find it is definitely helpful. So what are the challenges coming up after the budget gets settled? I mean, what challenges in general do libraries face that you'd like us, the public, to be aware of?
Well, I think that I'd like to reference something you had asked about earlier, and that was how people can get involved that want to support the library, whether they want to volunteer. And I think there's a number of paths there. And I think that one of the challenges that the libraries face is engaging the users and making them understand that the services that they receive, that they value them. We know that they do. We know that usage is up. And that the need is there. But making sure that folks understand, as you mentioned, the summer reading programs and so many things, oh, it's free at the library. And it is. There's not an admission fee to these programs, but it's not free. And it's driven by tax dollars. And it's paid for just like the public park that you may never go to.
Right.
And so you may think, well, I don't want it. But there's an expense for these things, and that the best thing that library supporters can do is make sure that they're engaged. The libraries all go out for a budget vote, and so you need to pay attention to that. An awful lot of them go out in tandem with the school budget, and you'll see that down the corner of the ballot. So, you know, you use the library services, you want to support those, and we see tremendous support. The passage rate for library budgets is in the high 90s on mm-hmm. average over the past 5 years. So the support is there, but we can always use more. Another way for your listeners to get engaged is at the state level, the New York Library Association provides a portal to make it easy for folks to get engaged in the conversation in Albany. If they go to nyla.org/advocacy, they can enroll, and we'll send them a message once a year. Usually it's done for this year as far as the big budget piece goes, but we put out that big call and ask. We provide an online system that will look up if you're not sure who your state assembly member is. It'll find that for you, give you their email address, and we provide a canned letter and let them write. So a challenge for us is engaging the library patrons all the way down to the local level and building that grassroots support so that we have a stronger voice in Albany and can demonstrate that the public is behind us as far as we know that they are. There's over 10 million library card holders in New York State. Over half the population has a library card, and we need all those folks to be willing to stand up and speak up for the services that they need and deserve.
The other thing I would add is, as Jeremy mentioned, many libraries are funded by public tax votes, and we have a great track record of support. It's clear that the communities support their libraries when they go out and vote to support a tax levy to provide library service. But the majority of public libraries in New York State are funded through either the municipality, in some way through the municipality. So talking to that town board, that village board, is really important. So for every New Yorker out there who loves and cares about their library, it's really important for them to go to find out how their library is funded and talk to those decision makers, because that's the message that the decision makers hear, is when the voters say, I think libraries are important, I need my tax dollars to go there. It seems ironic that you go to the entire community and ask them to vote, and over 90% of the time they support libraries wholeheartedly. But sometimes when you're talking to the five-member village board, it's much harder to get those five people engaged in why libraries are important.
Well, I want to thank both of you, Tim Burke and Jeremy Johannesson, for coming in today and talking about libraries. And if you haven't been to your library lately, check it out. There's a lot going on. Bring your kids, even the teenagers, and support your local libraries. I think they're awesome, awesome institutions. So thank you so much for coming in and sharing this information with us. And we will keep track of that legislation to mandate libraries and library teachers in schools. Coming up next week on the Albany Report, I have a guest, Elizabeth Moran. She wrote a report for the Environmental Advocates called License to Dump. Despite the hydrofracking ban, New York permits Pennsylvania to dump radioactive fracking waste inside our borders. She'll be in the studio to help us understand what's happening with hydrofracking waste and why it's coming into New York. So until then, we appreciate your calls and your questions, and we will talk to you next week on the Albany Report. You're listening to the Albany Report. If you have a question for next week's show or another topic, you can call and leave that question at 518-291-WGXC or send a message on Twitter to @WGXC. Or you can search Facebook for the Albany Report or send an email to thealbanyreport@gmail.com.
Sun, I say, it's all right.